They responded in 5 seconds. They did their jobs with courage, grace, tenacity, humility. 18 years later, do yours. Thank you.
Texas Governor Greg Abbott signed a controversial bill into law today that supporters claim protects religious rights. However, Democrats and critics argue that it will allow for discrimination against the state's LGBTQ community. Senate Bill 1978, titled the Save Chick-fil-A Bill, was signed by Abbott, a Republican, on Monday. The bill would prohibit the government from taking adverse action against individuals or businesses based on membership, support, or donation to religious organizations. The new legislation comes after the San Antonio City Council approved a new concessions contract for the San Antonio Airport, so long as Chick-fil-A was excluded. The popular fast food chain has gained attention for its controversial donations to religious organizations that oppose same-sex marriage, such as the Salvation Army.
How better to secure our elections than Election Guard software from Microsoft, which they are offering for free? Half of voting machine manufacturers and some state governments are already set to use the new technology for the 2020 general election. Whitney Webb of Mint Press, who broke this story, said, quote, "There is an added layer of concern given Microsoft's past, particularly their history of working with the U.S. government agencies to bypass encryption." Additionally, Microsoft is partnered in the project with Galois, a privately held U.S. company whose only investors are members of the Department of Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, DARPA, and the Office of Naval Research.
Donald Trump sent out a storm of tweets this morning in response to new polling results that indicate the president's future is in trouble. The survey found that at least 6 Democratic presidential candidates would defeat Trump in an election matchup. The president lashed back, tweeting that the numbers are the result of, quote, fake polling. Trump went on to deny a report in the New York Times that his campaign's own internal polling found him in a disadvantaged position across 17 states. "We are still in the early stages of the 2020 election, but the polls all indicate that Trump will have difficulty building his case with the American public for a second term."
And now, it's time for today's report from National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Indigenous news, issues, and culture. On today's episode, the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe says pipeline trucks are not welcome on their reservation, and Native groups rally against South Dakota's riot-boosting law.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Chairman Harold Frazier of the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe in South Dakota says vehicles or personnel working on the Keystone XL pipeline are not welcome on the reservation. Tribal police escorted trucks off the reservation this week they believe were associated with the pipeline after grassroots groups stopped vehicles. A tribal resolution requires Keystone XL vehicles which drive onto the reservation to be turned around immediately. Frazier says the tribe will not stand for encroachment or defilement on Sioux territory. The tribe opposes the pipeline, concerned about impacts to land and water. Meanwhile, Native groups plan to join environmental groups in Rapid City to rally against South Dakota's riot-boosting law. It was passed at the end of the 2019 legislative session. The legislation is the subject of a hearing to be held Wednesday at the federal courthouse in Rapid City. At the request of Governor Kristi Noem, lawmakers pushed the bill through to address protests against the Keystone XL pipeline. It holds protest supporters civilly and criminally liable if a riot breaks out. Several groups sued in federal court to stop that law from going into effect. One of them is the Sierra Club, whose South Dakota chairman traveled to Rapid City for the hearing. Mark Winiger says the wording of the law is too broad.
You know, it's not just that the Sierra Club could get sued or that Dakota Rural Action could get sued. Your grandmother could get sued. You know, your uncle, your daughter, anybody who talks about these problems enough that it inspires somebody to go march or demonstrate against them. So we're all in this together.
Other plaintiffs are Indian Collective, Dakota Rural Action, Black Hills Clean Water Alliance, and Indigenous Environmental Network, all represented by the ACLU. The groups plan to march to the federal courthouse to rally. A long-awaited road has breathed new life into a First Nations community on the border between Manitoba and Ontario. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, it could also end one of the longest boil water advisories in the country.
They call it Freedom Road. The 15-mile stretch of gravel road will make it easier for people living in the community of Shoal Lake 40 to finally access clean tap water. The reserve was cut off when an aqueduct was built to supply water to Winnipeg. Since then, residents of Shoal Lake 40 have had to use boats in the summer and winter roads cut through the ice just to supply basic needs. A long list of chiefs had fought for a road to end the hardship. $30 million in funding was needed. An agreement was finally reached in 2016, and the goal was recently achieved, and people celebrated to mark the opening of a link to the Trans-Canada Highway and the rest of Canada. Former Chief Herb Redsky was there.
I want to acknowledge and say thank you to the City of Winnipeg, the province of Manitoba, and the federal government for having the courage to do the right thing.
For others, it means a new beginning and growth for the community. The road will also bring the materials needed to build new homes and a new school. And Indigenous Affairs Minister Seamus O'Regan also said work can now begin on a new water treatment facility to end a boil water advisory that's lasted decades. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Funeral services were held Tuesday for a Seminole Tribe of Florida leader. As leader of the tribe in the late 1960s and early 70s, Joe Dan Osceola is credited with healthcare improvements and boosting economic development. He was also the first president of the organization United South and Eastern Tribes. In recent years, he served as an ambassador for the Seminole Tribe. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
Scott Warren's Arizona trial for providing water and aiding migrants ended in a hung jury and a de facto verdict of innocent, with 8 of 12 jury members voting for acquittal. Central to the case was whether Warren was wholly motivated by humanitarian purposes, or if he was illegally concealing the two men he was arrested with. Warren is one of 9 members of the aid group No More Deaths who have been charged with crimes related to their work, but he is the only one to face felony charges. The judge set a July 2nd date for a status hearing where information on an appeal or another trial could be announced. After the trial, Warren said that since his arrest in January of 2018, at least 88 bodies were recovered from the Arizona desert. Meanwhile, in Italy, German boat captain Pia Klemp faces up to 20 years for aiding upwards of 1,000 immigrants in the Mediterranean Sea. Though her trial has not yet started, Klemp has been banned from sailing along the Italian coast due to her activism in favor of refugees.
Vermont Governor Phil Scott signed a bill that prohibits government from interfering with the decision to get an abortion and protects access to contraception, sterilization, and family planning. The legislation states, quote, "No state or local law enforcement shall prosecute any individual for inducing, performing, or attempting to induce or performing the individual's own abortion." Next door in Maine, Governor Janet Mills signed a bill allowing physician assistants and some registered nurses to perform abortions instead of just doctors. Mills said, quote, "By signing this bill into law, Maine is defending the rights of women and taking a step towards equalizing access to care as other states are seeking to undermine, roll back, or outright eliminate these services. 8 other states already have similar laws in place."
KBOO News poet Dan Raphael is approaching psychological freefall.
Am I just slow and stubborn about giving up on the Democratic Party, or is it because I need something, anything to hold on to not fall into the thrashing void of hopelessness? I knew McConnell and Trump were ruthless enemies, but Pelosi and the Democrats keep revealing themselves as just another set of power junkies. No impeachment, no climate debate, no challenging incumbents. A spoonful of Biden helps the fascism go down. 30 years ago, Ralph Nader said we only had one political party, the business party, with the R's and D's as the party's two wings. Politics as ungainly as the spruce goose, as controllable as a Boeing stretch. The only ones comfortable are traveling first class. A round trip to Europe is a year's worth of car pollution. As fresh air and flowers are canceled by forced commuting and the spontaneous combustion of the long ignored, so too the joys of summer and personal acts of kindness can't keep away vampire capitalism, the constant threats from those in charge, the desperation in our neighbors' eyes. Our only safety net is each other, with more strands fraying every day. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
Last week, someone who claimed to be confined in London's Belmarsh prison sent cell phone video of Julian Assange to Gateway Pundit reporter Cassandra Fairbanks. The video revealed that Assange, who is now in the prison hospital, had drastically lost weight.
The cell phone video was shot in May, several weeks before Assange was moved to the Belmarsh Prison Hospital Ward for reasons unexplained. Gateway Pundit reporter Cassandra Fairbanks was able to speak to the person claiming to be a prisoner and concluded that whoever he was trying to help Assange. Others, however, suspected that the video might have been released by someone else and might be a psyop of some sort. Hungarian scholar George Zemueli, speaking on the weekly Unity 4J online vigil, expressed skepticism because shooting and releasing the video with a contraband cell phone would have put the prisoner at great risk.
Once you release this, how are the prison authorities going to respond? I mean, that's it. The prison authorities are going to come down on you like a ton of bricks. They're going to take the whole place apart, every single bed, mattress, to find this contraband phone. So by disclosing this footage, I mean, you're pretty much put paid to any further footage because they're going to come and take your phone away, but quick, and punish you quite severely for having a contraband phone.
Whatever the origin of the video, one thing was obvious, that Assange had drastically lost weight, as Cassandra Fairbanks said, also on the Unity for J vigil.
I also want to note that these pictures were especially shocking for me because I just saw him in March and it looks like he's lost 30 pounds. And so to me, everybody's saying that he looks really healthy and great. I think that people who have seen him recently beyond being dragged out of the embassy can all attest that these pictures are actually quite shocking. Like the amount of weight that he's lost in such a short period of time. People saying that he looks good is really frustrating because, yes, he looks good in a general sense. But when you think about the fact that he looked completely different in March, and even in March, I was like, wow, he's losing so much weight. What's going on? Because I had visited him in January as well. And in that couple months, he had lost a lot of weight then, too. And it seemed like from the first time that I visited him until these photos, it's a completely different person. Like he's like been cut in half. And I feel like it accelerated rapidly starting in like January, because by March, I think I even wrote in my article that I noticed he was losing a ton of weight.
British security forces arrested Assange in early April and dragged him out of Ecuador's London embassy to Belmarsh prison on the outskirts of London. In late May, the UN Rapporteur on Torture visited him there and said that he showed clear signs of prolonged psychological torture. He was moved to the prison's hospital at the end of May. Prison authorities said that they had, quote, grave concerns for his health, unquote, without saying why. In Berkeley, for Pacifica, KPFA Radio, I'm Ann Garrison.
The Intercept's expose of Brazilian judge Sergio Moro showing that he plotted with prosecutors to convict former President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva of corruption and prevent the Workers' Party from returning to power is creating ripples in Brazil and the U.S. Lula's imprisonment forced him out of the 2018 presidential race, which he was widely expected to win. This paved the way for the election of Jair Bolsonaro, who then appointed Moro as justice minister. Senator Bernie Sanders said Lula should be released from prison and his conviction annulled. Representative Ro Khanna called on the Trump administration to investigate the case. Moro is facing growing pressure to step down from public office, including from the Brazilian Bar Association, which has called for his suspension and for an investigation. On the other hand, President Trump has embraced Bolsonaro, declaring, quote, "They say he's the Donald Trump of South America."
It is widely known that the meat industry has had heavy environmental impacts. Recently, there have been growing concerns by the general public about the welfare of animals in industrial farming. But will the meat industry ever actually change? Perhaps, and maybe sooner than you might think. According to a recent report, by 2040, approximately 60% of meat will not come from slaughtered animals. Instead, it will be grown in vats or be replaced by plant-based alternatives that taste like meat. Companies like Beyond Meat and Impossible Foods have invested $1 billion into vegan alternatives, and they have rapidly seen increasing success and support. In addition, other companies are choosing to invest in actually growing meat cells in culture. This would mean real meat would be produced without the need to raise and kill animals. These products have yet to be released to consumers. The report indicates that in 2040, 35% of meat will be cultured, while 25% will come from vegan replacements. While these estimates may seem drastic, many organizations say that the figures could actually be an underestimation.
We are halfway through the heat wave that is leaving Oregon residents sweltering under intense, record-breaking heat. Temperatures soared to 96 degrees in Portland on Tuesday, shattering the previous record of 94 set in 1941. The National Weather Service has issued a heat advisory in the area from noon on Tuesday until 9 p.m. tonight. While the unusual temperatures are certainly concerning, what may be more worrisome is the tendency for people to seek out rivers and creeks to cool off. While normally seeking refuge in local waters would be a fun summertime activity, experts have warned that this behavior could cause physical harm due to the frigid water temperatures that hover around 50 degrees from snowmelt this time of year. It is reported that just 1 minute in the water could send a person into cold shock, causing involuntary gasping, difficulty breathing, and loss of muscle control. This is a reminder from KABU to stay safe in Portland this week.
You're listening to the KABU Evening News for Wednesday, June 12, 2019. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories and tips at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Mackenzie Beard, Yasmin Kobanoglu, Dan Raphael, Jason Schuerman, and Melinda Wolfert. The producer is Lisa Loving, and our engineer is Randall Rigo. The interim director of Evening News and Public Affairs is Lisa Loving. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Leslie McLam.
And I'm Yasmin Kobanoglu. Coming up tomorrow morning on KABU, at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, Voices from the Edge with guest host Rochelle Dixon. At 9 on Press Watch, Teresa Mitchell takes a look at all the news you're not supposed to know. At 10, it's The Heather McCoy Show. At 11, it's Between the Covers. And at 11:30, Words and Pictures. Thank you for tuning in to the KABU Evening News.
KABU News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
The American-Iranian Friendship Council is organizing against the possibility of war with Iran. KABU's Lisa Loving spoke with Gudarz Ekhtedari about the issues and what we can do right here at home.
We are here with Gudarz Ekhtedari. He's with the American-Iranian Friendship Council. They've got a variety of important activities coming up in the next 2 weeks through the end of the month. But you said you're having a public town hall with one of our elected officials. I want to hear all about it, Gudars.
Okay. Well, the thing is that probably cable listeners are aware that there is this drumbeat of war going on. And our organization, which goes back to 2008, have always tried to remedy these conflicts and try to bring two countries together. After a short period of kind of calm during Obama's administration, Trump came in with the whole idea of trying to break up the agreement that was on the nuclear issue between Iran and the six superpowers, and he did that. Then after that, he started imposing sanctions on Iran, and now with John Bolton as the National Security Advisor and Pompeo as Foreign Secretary, he's trying to basically up the ante and create an environment that really the end of it would be a war. And experience for Americans during the last 20 some years of war in the Middle East is basically no surprise to anybody, and we know that it would end up with a disaster, with a tragedy, both for the Americans and the Iranian people. 80 million people are living in Iran. And there are plenty of Iranian, around 6 million Iranian live in the U.S. as immigrants, and most of them are basically contributing to this country and to this society, including the city of Portland and the state of Oregon. So we're trying to basically try to find a way to humanize the face that media and mainstream media has always tried to demonize Iranians and make them the public enemy. And for that purpose, we are approaching the Congress people. We have a town hall this Saturday coming up with Earl Blumenauer, and we have scheduled another one in summer with Susan Bonamici to have a town hall with Iranian people and Iranian constituents. And what we are inviting people from, not just Iranian, but people who experience the result of war in Afghanistan, in Iraq, in Syria, and elsewhere in the Middle East, to come forward and basically in a session that this town hall has a storytelling at the beginning, and everybody would share 3 to 4 minutes of their own stories and their families. And then we will have a question answer.
Gudars, who do you hope will go to this event? You just said anyone could come. Who do you want to be there?
Well, the purpose is, as I mentioned, both the intention of Blumenauer and ourselves is to hear and to listen to Iranians. But we also know that we have lots of allies in this community, the peace community. So we are expecting them at least to be there to support. But the first half of the program, which is a storytelling, is kind of for either people from the Iranian community or people who have relatives, Iranian relatives, that they want to share their stories. So after that, then the second half of the program will be question answer, and everybody else that is there are welcome to ask their question from congressmen. And we know that Herb Blumenauer have always been kind of positive on the issue of Iran, but at the end of the day, they're all politicians.
Now, Gudars, I've known you for years. I'm thinking about the first time I ever met you, and this was an issue. Can you talk a little bit about the history of your organization, the work you've done, and how impactful you've been? Because this is, it's scary, and yet there's a lot of rooted organizing behind it, too.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, my history with KABU goes back to 2001. As soon as the war in Afghanistan started, I was invited to participate, and I had a monthly shows on Middle East. It was called Voices of the Middle East. And so we used to kind of share stories, bring political advocates and also analysts to speak to the issues during the George Bush's presidency. And we participated in all the peace movements, rallies, and marches in those years. Then all of a sudden, Obama got elected, and all the peace lovers, they realized that, okay, well, now it's our own guy in the White House, and so there is no need to mobilize. And even today, the only people that I can go to and talk to them about the potential of the war and the disaster are the old people. The younger people are just, at least they're not showing their concern. This country, I think, has always been like that. It's just this up and down of the roller coaster that happens, and some people, they assume, okay, now that we are in the power, then we don't need to be active, we don't need to be vocal, we don't need to be marching for peace. And then continues. The war continues, regardless of whether they are Democrat or Republican. But for Trump, is really a scary situation. So one of the things that with our organization, American-Iranian Friendship Council, we have been doing is that either provide a way of bringing our culture and humanity into the city of Portland by providing concerts, Iranian festivals in summer every year, and all kind of activities, social and cultural, to basically humanize that face, that facade that's being created for us by mainstream media, unfortunately. And this event that we have next week is the on Saturday, 22nd of June, at Portland State at Lincoln Hall, is a music concert. But again, for picking who performs, we have invited Rahim Al-Hajj, who is an Iraqi oud player, and he will be playing with an Iranian virtuoso, tar virtuoso. She is Sahba Mutalibi, and they will be performing together. And this is an idea that people and nations don't have really animosity within themselves. It's just the government. Iranians and Iraqis were in war for 8 years in the 80s, but there's nothing between two people. My best friends in this town are Iraqi, and so we are trying to cherish that friendship and show that it is possible to be human and like each other and love each other as a human being.
I have to leap sideways and ask you again, the performance that's coming up June 22nd, the music recital at Lincoln Hall at Portland State, what instruments are they both playing? There's an oud, but talk about it. What are the two instruments?
Yeah, Rahim Al-Hajj is a master of oud, and both of them have played in like major venues, including Lincoln Center in Washington, D.C., and so they are masters in their music. So the instrument oud is basically what Rahim Al-Hajj is playing, and it's an Arabic instrument. The instrument that Sahba is playing, she is tar virtuoso. Tar is a Persian lute in a sense, and but she is one of the best player, and it's very interesting to know that, for example, in Iran there are lots of prejudice against women performing, and she has been the winner of the national award for 4 years in a row. The other side of this, which makes her a real iconic person, is that religiously and faithfully she is Baha'i, which they are being persecuted in Iran, but her performance in this town is basically just a show of love for the country and how she cherishes the Iranian culture and history. So we're trying to really bring a best piece of our culture and art into the city of Portland, and we hope that people would come and attend the performance. The tickets are available at aifcpsfc.org, and more information about the performance and the concert is also will be available at that website.
For KABU News, I'm Lisa Loving.
Is a proud co-sponsor of the 50th anniversary of Oxamoxwa with the Garcia Birthday Band on Friday, June 14th at 8 p.m. at the Aladdin Theater in Portland. Oxamoxwa is a 1969 album by the Grateful Dead. Fans and critics alike consider this era to be the band's experimental apex. The Garcia Birthday Band is a group of veteran musicians interpreting and celebrating the repertoire of the late Jerry Garcia and the Grateful Dead. Again, that's the 50th anniversary of Oxamoxwa with the Garcia Birthday Band on Friday, June 14th at 8 p.m. at the Aladdin Theater, 3017 Southeast Milwaukee Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kabu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Waterfront Blues Festival, taking place July 4th through 7th at Waterfront Park in Portland. The Waterfront Blues Festival is the largest blues festival west of the Mississippi. The festival features more than 100 performances on four stages, including the Robert Cray Band, St. Paul and the Broken Bones, Trombone Shorty, and Vintage Trouble. There will also be workshops, cruises on the Willamette River, activities for kids, after-hour jams, fireworks, and more. Again, that's the 32nd Annual Waterfront Blues Festival, July 4th through 7th at Waterfront Park in Portland. More information can be found at kabu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. KBOO programming is made possible by KABU member listeners and support from